Breakfast, Tuesday morning at 8:30, right here on KHUM.
All right, we are back. The time now is 11:19, and you got it tuned to KHUM, Humboldt Grown Radio Without the Rules. My name's Lindsay B. Happy to be hanging out with you today, and really excited because on the line, all the way in Florida, is joining us Brooks Hubbert. How's it going, Brooks?
Hi, it's going well.
Thank you for...
How are you today?
I'm doing good. I'm trying to multitask, which you know me well, and that doesn't really mix with my personality too well. But I did want to thank you for taking some time to talk about the water phone. And do you mind if we start off playing a clip of this instrument? You sent me a clip not too long ago. I'm going to try to find it here and get on the air. Does that sound like a good plan to you?
That would be great.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
All right, so we're going to listen to this clip, which I have not heard yet, that Brooks just sent me. And this is what the water phone essentially sounds like. It's here on KHUM. So we're listening to the water phone, and joining us on the line is Brooks, who made this water phone. Are you playing this water phone on this?
I actually am playing that as well, yes.
And so if you were to describe to someone who has who's never seen or heard the water phone, we've obviously just heard it, but how would you describe the water phone and like your elevator pitch?
Well, it is, I describe it as a friction idiophone. It's a percussion instrument that uses water to modulate the tones. And, but it's a special kind of percussion instrument in that the rods are excitable by friction, so you can play them with a bow and actually cause them to sing in pitch, in different pitches. And that's kind of the short description.
And so you did not invent this instrument, but you have taken over the production of this instrument because one of your good friends invented it. I was doing a little bit of research. Can you tell me a little bit about Richard Waters, who originally created this instrument?
Yeah. Richard was a multimedia artist, brilliant watercolor painter, and inventor of many different sound devices. The water phone being the most prominent one. But Richard, he grew up in Mississippi and then moved out to California. Went to art school out there and then ended up in the Bay Area. And so he made water phones for a long time in Sebastopol, and then ended up moving to Hawaii and then moved back to the Mississippi Gulf Coast in his retirement years. And that was when he and I became buddies. I'm originally from Mississippi Gulf Coast, and so he was in Gulfport, which is my hometown, And we ended up hanging out a lot, writing music together. You know, he would come hang out at my gigs a lot. And it was right about that time I had gotten a patent, and, you know, he had patented the Waterphone. And so, you know, he helped share some anecdotes and experience with that with me. So it was really an incredible experience for me to get mentored by this brilliant artist who was interested in what I had to offer. And, you know, I didn't realize at the time that I was getting this knowledge that was really going to carry on, because he died in 2013, in the midst of while we were working on this project that was going to be a tribute to a Gulf Coast artist, Walter Anderson. And, you know, he passed away that summer of 2013.
And so did he physically show you how, because you started taking over as soon as he passed away, you started taking over the production of the Waterphone. Did he physically like show you how, did you work together building these, welding them?
Well, no, actually what happened was, he had showed me all about this instrument, of course, because we were working on, creating some music together. So as a result, I got to ask him really in-depth questions about the tuning, and I got to hear it straight from him how and what he did. I didn't know at the time that this information was going to be so important because, you know, we didn't know he was about to leave. But through the information, and then working with his daughter, I was able to recreate the exact process that he used to construct them.
And so, backtracking just a little bit about the tuning, that's kind of one of the things that makes this instrument so unique, and that it's really atonal. How do you go about tuning a Waterphone?
So the Waterphone is tuned to overtones in the bottom resonant pan. And as each pan is just slightly different, there's different overtones in each one. So each one has its own unique tuning.
And so how do you, as a builder, come across the frequencies that resonate with the pan that you're building these with?
It's all by ear.
Wow, and you do make different sized Waterphones.
Yes, I
saw some that were like 12 inches and 16 inches in diameter. Does that affect the scales, like the number of notes that you put into the Waterphone, depending on what the diameter of the pan is? That might sound like a silly question.
That does increase the number of resonant rods that can be mounted on each one. But also, the larger a pan, the deeper tones that you're going to be able to, it's going to be able to produce, acoustically speaking. The actual range of the instrument is sub and supersonic. It goes below the range of hearing and above the range of hearing. the low notes that you can hear really depend on the larger sizes of bottom being able to push the air for those low notes.
And I was reading in my research some really interesting things about the Waterphone. There was a fella who was doing an interspecies communication project. Are you familiar with that project that was like later picked up by Greenpeace to try to call animals who are in danger away from certain like fishing boats and things like that?
Yes.
And so they've used the Waterphone to communicate, to successfully call whales. What do you know about that whole thing? I'm very curious as to how that came about.
Well, I don't know exactly how it came about, but I would imagine because of the fact that the instrument can be played in the water and underwater, and it uses water, I would imagine that that was like, hey. And then, I mean, you know, when you hear it, it sounds like a whale, I mean, right off the bat. So I would imagine it just wasn't too long before somebody took one out in the ocean to play it. And then, you know, I mean, they have summoned pods of orca whales up there on the West Coast. I mean, it's been going on for a while.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I believe there was a documentary done on it. In the 80s.
Okay. Well, I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure if you knew too much about that. It does look like over here on the West Coast near Victoria and mm-hmm. British Columbia is where they've been using the water phone to summon whole pods of orca whales.
There was a guy in Oregon too that used one to summon pods of whales up there as well.
Yeah, it's pretty cool that to think that, you know, someone's inventing an instrument just for the sake of music, and then to see it applied in this other scientific way to help curb these like massacres and stuff they were trying to prevent that were happening in Japan, the dolphin massacres and things like that. So
mm-hmm.
it's pretty neat.
It is. And then, I mean, on top of that too, it's used in sound healings all over the world.
Because of the range of frequencies that it can achieve?
And because of its particular way that it generates sound, it causes you to focus and pay attention. So it's used as a meditation tool, as well as, you know, a sound healing device. Which I find to be one of the most incredible things about it, because, you know, the sound is typically regarded as spooky or scary, but, you know, the other side of that coin of the unknown can also be wonderful and healing, as well as kind of dark and scary. And I just like this, you know, it's interesting to see how things naturally can straddle worlds that are so diverse.
For sure. And you know, I will say that when I first heard the water phone, it sounded kind of abrasive to me. But then since I've listened to a lot of water phone music in the last week, and it's definitely growing on me, and it's amazing too that you can not only, so the track that we're listening to in the background, you're bowing the instrument essentially right now, mm-hmm. you're bowing the rods, but there are other ways to play the water phone. There are
certainly
there
it is
are
a percussion instrument.
You
so
can play with mallets, right? Or with your hands?
You can use mallets. You can use little metal strikers. I like to take little pieces of acrylic, you know, acrylic rods, and use that as a striker. I mean, I also drum on it with my hands a lot. Which has a really nice sound. There's a guy named Jesse Stewart in I think he's in Vancouver, and he is this guy is an incredible percussionist and water phone player. He does some things with it that wig me out. I like, can't get enough of it.
Yeah, and you know, I have a friend who I was just actually speaking with her earlier this week, and she just got done writing the score for some music, and she found it fascinating that we were talking about the water phone, and she said that the water phone was all over the score for this music that she had written for this movie, but she had not ever seen a water phone before. It was all like MIDI controlled library type stuff. Do you feel like most of the water phone that we hear in movies is from sound libraries? Or
a lot of times it is sampled. There you can hear in the background there is some percussive sounds now.
Yeah, I'm trying to switch it up so we can hear how diverse this instrument is.
But yeah, you do hear it. It has been sampled extensively in a couple different libraries, and so I know it is used for that a lot. But a lot of composers like to use the straight up, you know, unprocessed Waterphone sound, because, I mean, it's, you can't really, it's such a unique thing that it's very difficult to model any sort of tonal control in the computer like you can get out of actually physically playing. There's so much more nuance and do it, you know, and doing it yourself.
Right, and it seems like it would be kind of a difficult instrument to mic. Like, how do you go about miking a waterphone?
Well, you know, I like to use multiple mics, honestly. As with kind of anything that's, you know, truly acoustic like that, when you get a multi-mic placement, really brings out the character. But typically what I do is I'll put a mic underneath it facing up, and then I'll hang one over it facing down into the neck.
And so the neck is actually where you put the water into the waterphone, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you were to turn the waterphone upside down, water would come out of it.
Absolutely.
About how much water goes into a waterphone? Does that change the sound of it? Probably, obviously, it changes the sound depending on how much you put in.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. It's less than you would think. You know, a lot of people look at it and think of it as being full. But to get the sound of the water, you want it to be moving around in there. So it actually needs to be, you know, just a little bit. So I've found that about 6 ounces is, between 6 and 8 ounces is the most, is the ideal amount.
That you, for looking at the waterphone, which if you haven't gotten a chance to check out what a waterphone looks like, what would you describe it looking like, Brooks? Like an open avocado or an open artichoke flower, maybe? I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah, it just looks like its own thing, you know? People always tell me it looks like some kind of trophy or a ancient some ancient kind of sculpture or something.
I definitely haven't seen anything quite like it, especially in the musical instrument realm. So you can check out what the waterphone looks like. The best place to go if you're interested in the waterphone would probably be the website, right? Waterphone.com.
Sure. Waterphone.com. Absolutely.
And you're making waterphones for some seriously famous musicians these days, right? Didn't you just make one for Portishead?
I did, yes. Jeff Barrow of Portishead got one. He's working on doing some movie soundtracks, and so he got one from me to use. And so it was a night that was pretty cool. Hearing from him. But I've made them for people all over the world since I got started. You know, I mean, literally China, Japan, all over Europe. Of course, you know, America, South America. I sent one to Colombia, several up to Canada.
And do you feel like most of the people who are getting these around the world are using them for sound healing? Is that what you said?
Well, a bit about probably a third of them end up going to yoga studios. And then probably another third are like composers. And then another third are usually like percussion, you know, like professors of percussion, or, you know, people who do not just like drum set or whatever, but more like classical percussion. Those guys like to have them too.
So I think it might be time to wrap things up here soon, Brooks. Is there, mm-hmm. what could you sum up what your favorite thing about the waterphone is, and if there, you know, if there's any questions for any of the listeners who are listening to K-Hum right now, maybe some resources of where they can go and learn more about it?
Well, you know, of course, what the website is going to be the place for sure, waterphone.com. And then, you know, you can hunt videos. There's videos, of course, all on YouTube of people playing them. And I'm trying to think. But, yeah, that would definitely be the check out the website.
And your favorite thing about the waterphone?
My favorite thing about the waterphone is the way that it brings people kind of out of their skin. When you physically hear it, I mean, recorded, it's eerie, but when you stand in front of it and you can feel the air move and hear it, the way that it affects people and it brings them out of their skin and brings you right into the moment, that's my favorite thing about it, because it just, you know, it puts you right here, right now.
Cool.
And that's kind of a mystical place, you know.
It seems like a mystical place, and I totally relate to what you're saying, and I have never really seen a waterphone in the flesh and gotten to experience it on that level of being in the same room, and I imagine that just the frequencies that it creates and the tones in that room would be really intense and and a really cool experience. So I hope at some point...
Next time I come out to California, I'll make sure to bring one.
Okay. Please do. Please do.
Sure.
Thank you, Brooks, so much.
Thank you, Lindsay.
Yeah, thanks for taking time out of your day to talk with us. And I hope that you get a chance, if you're listening and you're interested, you can contact Brooks through his website, which is waterphone.com. Learn the whole backstory on Richard Waters and how he came up with the instrument. And we're going to go ahead and call it at that. Take a real quick break. And then I have a Prince song that I've been really, really rocking out on for the past couple days. I think I'm going to play that for you right after these words from our sponsors here on K-Hum.
It's